Real quick, before we get into the show, I wanted to share a new service called Getida that Ken and I have been using that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, G-E-T-I-D-A, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for firing the man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast, a show for anyone who wants to be their own boss. If you sit in a cubicle every day and know you are capable of more, then join us. This show will help you build a business and grow your passive income streams in just a few short hours per day. And now your hosts, serial entrepreneurs David Schomer and Ken Wilson.
Welcome, everyone, to the Firing the Man podcast. On today's episode, we have the pleasure of interviewing Irving Chung. Irving is the founder and CEO of Brand Guidance, a resource for franchise exploration and investment. After 25 years working in the corporate world, Irving learned the hard way that working for the man does not lead to wealth generation or happiness. Through franchising, Irving was able to become an entrepreneur by leveraging a proven business model with lower risk, turnkey operations, training, and marketing support. Now, as a franchise consultant, Irving pays it forward by helping others discover an opportunity to create unlimited income and freedom through franchise ownership. Welcome to the show, Irving.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. So can you please share with our listeners a little bit about your background and path to discovering entrepreneurship through franchising?
Yeah. So, I mean, like a lot of people, you know, I came out of college and was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, got a job in advertising, loved it, produced Super Bowl commercials, met celebrities. I mean, what's not there to like? And I was getting a paycheck. But like all of us, corporate's great until it's not. Like literally, I was in my 50s and I woke up one morning with heart palpitations and I leaned to my wife. I said, listen, I think I need to go to ER. I feel like my heart doesn't feel right. I feel like I'm having a heart attack. And of course, both of us like freaked out and rushed to the ER and checked me in overnight, did all kinds of tests. And doctor came in and goes, you know what? Great news. You didn't have a heart attack. Bad news is it's probably coming because you have all the signs. This was an acute panic attack. And what it was just years of working 50-hour weeks with high deadlines, bosses leaning on you every day. I mean, I literally never turned off my phone, you know, because in the service business, like you always got to be, you know, Johnny on the spot. And I had a particularly bad boss, which exacerbated it, right? He's the kind of guy that never thanks anyone for anything. It's never good enough. And at the end, and that made me do a real reality check because my doctor's like, you need to make some major changes because this scare is going to be a reality. He goes, stop drinking coffee, you know, work out, like all these things. I was like, no, that's addressing the symptoms. That's not the root cause. And I started stepping back and saying, okay, yeah, I'll stop coffee, but that's going to be, you know, a temporary fix. And I realized that did a health check. I looked at three things. Am I happy? Am I satisfied with my career? And is my bank account full? Right? If I'm going to sacrifice my life for these companies or this company in particular, right, does it check the boxes? It was negative on all three of those. So I was like, why am I doing this? If I put these hours into my own business, I'd be a lot better off. And that was my inspiration. So I knew I wanted to own a business, but I didn't know what I wanted to do, right? That's a dilemma for a lot of us. It's like, okay, great. I want to be an entrepreneur, but doing what? And so someone introduced me to a franchise consultant, you know, similar to what I do with the same group I'm with. And they opened my eyes to the world of franchising. And I ended up going with an indoor cycling studio because of three reasons. It's a recurring revenue stream. Fitness is going to be a relevant trend for a long time. And it's designed as a semi-absentee owner business, which means that I don't run the day-to-day. And so I always had intentions of starting my own marketing consultancy, which led also to be a franchise consultancy. So today I have three businesses, right? Within 6 years, I've tripled my income and I work less than I did in my corporate job.
That's awesome. So I want to dig into this. I've always heard about franchising. I don't know a ton about it. I'm sure the listeners got tons of questions. And so number one is if someone's listening to this show and they're like, yeah, I want to buy a Subway or I want to buy a franchise. What are we looking like out of pocket costs? How much does it cost to buy a franchise?
It's funny. First of all, it's funny you mentioned Subway because like 99% of people say when I say franchise, they think Subway, Chick-fil-A, 7-Eleven, you know, and those are ginormous, right? right? Those are like 800 to a million and a half. And so to answer your question is, most people that invest in franchises do not do it in their own cash. Cash is king. You need cash. You need money to make money. So bottom line, right? People come to me with no money. I'm like, yeah, it's not going to work. You can't invest in a business with no money. You can't start a business with no money. I mean, it just doesn't work. But with the advent, so this is interesting. You and I, during the background, were talking about World War II. At the end of World War II, the government created something called the Small Business Administration, SBA. The whole point of it was to help returning GIs start their own business because banks were too risk averse, and they still are. They don't lend money to startup businesses. If you have an SBA-backed loan, that means government's backing the loan. They'll back a percentage of that loan, which gives banks and businesses confidence to invest in startup businesses, which include anything from a startup to a franchise, because they're higher risk, so they're not willing to risk it. But with the SBA loan, they're willing to put that money on risk, right? It also gives people who want to buy a business or start a business the ability to finance 80% of that business. So the minimum loan is $200,000. All you need is $40,000 to get $200,000. It's very achievable. I also have programs that allow you to use retirement savings and is viewed as a alternative retirement investment. So you actually buy a business and the government won't ding you that 20% that they do if you touched it for any other means. So there's a lot of solutions. Now, you know, personally, when I bought my studio, it was $500,000. I used $75,000 in cash. I used $125,000 from my retirement IRA, and I borrowed, you know, $250,000. Does that add up to $500,000? It was close.
Sure.
But I used a variety of solutions is the answer. So, you know, all I needed was $75,000 in cash. And so the minimum is probably $40,000 in cash is, you know, as I was saying, that you can get into a nice range of businesses that way.
And so just for the listeners and for myself, Nina, I mentioned Subway, a guy that I used to work with, his family owned a bunch of Subway, so it came to mind. Now you're saying kind of the Subway is kind of at the top of the heap for buying a franchise. Now, and you mentioned the SBA, the minimum loan is 200. And so I'm imagining there's a range of businesses in the franchise space that, you know, from lower end to higher end. And so where do most of those fit? Like entry level, can you get one for 200K? Is that possible? And mid-level, 500K?
The investment range in franchising, and there's over 4,500 different franchises. So there's a bunch across every industry. The investment ranges from 75,000 to, you know, 2 million. And more. The average brick and mortar, when I say brick and mortar, that's a restaurant, a gym, anything where you have to build a store, is around 450, 500. The whole other category I have in my portfolio is a service business. The average there is about 150. Okay, I'm talking house cleaning, roofing, window replacement. Those are service business because you go to a location to deliver services. On the lower side, the 75,000, I have businesses that are more or less kind of personal businesses. What I mean by that is I have business consulting opportunities, executive recruiting opportunities, other consultancy advisory businesses where you're the primary employee. You can grow from there, but because you don't have huge amounts of payroll and location fees, like more or less what you're paying for is a franchise fee, training, materials, operating systems. So that's the lowest side.
So to map out this stream of cash flows, and not my inner accountant's about to flare out. So there's a lump sum to kind of get you in the door. And then there would be series of presumably monthly payments back to the franchise as you're operating that business. Is that?
Yeah. So let me give you the financial breakdown, right? So when you invest in a business, you're investing in three buckets of funds. The franchise fee is a one and done fee that buys you the right to own that franchise for about 10 years. The average franchise fee is about $50,000. And once you pay it once, you're done for 10 years until you want to renew it or sell it, whatever. And, you know, so that's that. The middle bucket is startup costs, right? That's the cost to build your store, you know, train employees, stuff like that, buy insurance, you know, and that bucket ranges broadly from a service business might be $50,000 to a brick and mortar about $300,000. And that's the cost that it takes to get open. Then you got working capital. Every franchise requires you to have in a brick and mortar, 6 months of working capital. In a service business, 3 months of working capital. That's to make sure you have enough money to run through the runway until you're cash flow positive. So that's your total investment. When I say your average is $500,000, that includes all that, those three buckets, which includes working capital as payroll, marketing costs, cost of goods, rent, you know, fuel, all those kind of things. So, you know, it's a pretty encompassing total. because franchisors want to make sure you're well-funded. The last thing you want to do is put you into a business that's going to cause you to go out of business because you don't have enough funds, right? So that's a very important part of my job, is also to help qualify people, help guide people in terms of what's your investment budget. That's, I mean, you know, we'll talk about what the best business is, but investment budget is critical to the assessment.
If you want tips and strategies on how to start, grow, and monetize your business online, check out the Digital Revolution podcast with Eli Adams. We interview digital experts from around the world that share their personal stories. They talk about what they're currently working on and where they see the future going. But most importantly, they share tactics in their specific area of expertise with the hope of helping you improve your digital presence online. You can listen to the Digital Revolution podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, or simply click on the link in the show notes below.
So yeah, let's go right into that. What is the best franchise to own?
And I get guys that come in and say, okay, and I use the term guys generally, I want the business to make me the most money. I was like, well, you know, true. Yes, we all want that. That's not enough. Okay. There's three key criteria that I will work with my clients on. One is economics, right? How much can you make? How much can you afford? Right? Because I have an indoor swim school, an auditorium. It costs about $1.8 million, but you can net $300,000 to $500,000 a year, right? So yeah, I want to make $300,000 to $500,000. Sure. Well, do you have $1.8 million? No. Well, then take that off your plate because you can't afford it. So economics is number one. Number two is conviction. You got to believe in what you do. I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's senior care, grooming dogs, selling children's enrichment programs like dance and soccer or fitness, right? Because no matter what it is, you're selling it. And for you to sell it with honesty and integrity, you got to have conviction in it. And, you know, because I get people saying, oh, I don't care what it is. Well, that's not true. You know, I mean, unless you have no morals and no integrity, right? And most of us have a little bit, you know? And then the third, hopefully more than a little bit. And then the third is passion. Okay. Yeah. Money could bring passion, right? And who's not going to get excited if an 18-wheeler came and dropped hundreds of thousands of dollars on my doorstep? Am I going to be passionate? I'm going to be super passionate. The reality is it's going to take you ramp up time to get to that level where you're making tons of money. It's going to be a long road of 6 months to a year just to get launched, just to learn the business, just to hire and recruit and make sure you got the right team in place. It's going to be so rough road. So making money is not easy when you own a business, okay? And it's not different from starting your first corporate job in a new company. You got to find out where the bathrooms are. You got to find out, you know, what the boss's goals are. You got to determine what your goals are, what's your capability, who are the must-know people in your office, you know, who are the people you should keep away from. I mean, it's all a learning curve, right? I mean, 6 months into a new job, it's not even your own business. You're still struggling to figure out, how do I navigate the space? But that first year, if you don't like your business, it's going to be a miserable year. But if you're passionate about something, it's the rough times that you need to be motivated during. It's not when you're making thousands of dollars. What's going to lead you to get to that success? And there's human science. The more passionate you are about what you do, better you're going to get. You're going to be, the better you're going to do. So, I mean, those are the three characteristics. If you can have all three of those, that's the holy grail.
Now, a follow-up question to that, to kind of narrow this down a little bit. Let's say you have a client that comes in and they checkbox all three of those, lots of businesses. Which businesses, and maybe it's a different sector, service business or products or whatever, has the highest like ROI, has the highest margins?
That is part of it, right? So when you look at it, not every business makes the same amount of money. For example, Supercuts, right? I know people who own 8 or 10 Supercuts and they're millionaires, but each store only makes about 80, 85,000. Small footprint, but you know, you got a lot of overhead. You got haircutters, you got, you know, and you're charging $12 a haircut.
Yeah.
Right? But if you own, you know, 8 or 10 of them, you're making good money. Like I mentioned, that one auditorium can make $300,000 to $500,000. A med spa can make $300,000 to $500,000. A med spa costs what, $600,000 to $700,000, right? So you got to look at the economic model. When you have a range of businesses, one of the things when you do a franchise investigation, they're going to share historical earnings with you. They're going to share the business model with you. They're going to share the P&L with you so you can actually see and create your own pro forma. They're going to let you talk to existing franchisees to validate those earnings and that pro forma. So when you look at the numbers and you actually have all that data in front of you, you're going to have projections to look at and say, okay, is my investment to return ratio positive? Is my work effort, my interest to return ratio going to be where I want it to be? And most people have a starting point that's based on their salary. I mean, I talk to people who make $150,000 average executive salary to some people making $500,000 in executive salary. Well, when you come into this, that's your mindset and point of entry. If I say, hey, I can get you a business and make you $150,000, the guy making $500,000 would be like, well, that's not enough. The guy who's making $150,000 is like, oh yeah, I'll take that. Of course, everyone wants to make more than that, right? But that's where the financial planning comes in. When I talk about the economics, you know, you do have to take that in consideration. Not all businesses make the same, but you'll get insight into what the earning potential is. Now, here's what I love about franchising. If your average franchisee can make $1 million a year gross and net $250,000, all you got to ask yourself is, can I be average?
That's true.
Yeah, that's what it is, right? Now, if let's say you got three, and it happens to me a lot, someone investigates three businesses. Hey, Irving, I love all three of these. I can't make up my mind. Well, number one, look at the economics, which one will make you the most. And then number two, which one are you going to have most fun running? You know, one's rational, the other one is emotional. You can check those two boxes, then that's where you want to be.
So the next question's a very interesting one. And I think the last statistic that I saw somewhere, it might be out of date, but it was 95% of small businesses fail within the first 5 years. There's risk with owning a business. And so how risky are franchises in your experience?
Extremely frightening, right? The number one reason people don't do this is because they're scared to death. But the same person is scared to even change their crappy job for a better job because they're used to that paycheck. Oh, I don't know what's out there. You know, those are the people, sky's falling kind of people. Those people just, they need a job anyway because they're too afraid to do anything else. The people who are not afraid to take risks are the ones who really should be getting into business. Now, to answer your question, startup businesses have a very high rate of failure because you're starting something from scratch. When you think about starting your own business, you have an idea. Hey, I want to start an e-commerce business. Hey, yeah, I'm going to go buy some product. I'm going to go sell it on Amazon. You have no idea what's going to sell it to you. Throw it up there, but you've already committed all this money for inventory. It's about trial and error. So 90% of what you do as a startup business is just trying stuff to see what sticks. And if you have enough money to keep trying till you find that answer, then you've got a business. Most people run out of money before they figure out what works and what doesn't. And you got to do it quick. Here's the difference. In a franchise business, somebody did that learning for you 10 to 20 years ago. Figured out what not to do and what to do to make money quickly. And you know what? When you start a franchise, they're going to train you. This is exactly what you need to do. This is what you should never do. And this is how you're going to make money. So when you learn the system and you apply it, right, you're getting a cheat sheet. If I gave you a college final and say, hey, you know, you study all your notes for the year and, you know, study and make sure you're ready for this test. If I gave you the answer key, which student do you think is going to have the better chance of passing that test? In a franchise business, you can get the answer key. Not only that, you're going to get a supply chain established with 200 franchisee buying power. So you're going to get cost of goods much lower than you can get as an individual. You're going to get an operating system for booking, tracking, scheduling. So think about this comparison. A mom and pop plumber goes, oh yeah, hey, you know, Ken, I can be at your house tomorrow at 8 a.m. All right, great. You hang up for the phone. Do you get an email? Do you get a text? You just got his word, right? You're sitting there. You took off of work. You're sitting at home at 8 a.m. No one shows up. 9:30, no one shows up. You call the guy up. Hey, dude, where are you? I'm at home. Oh, sorry. I got caught up on my job. You know what? I'll be there as soon as I can. Can you just wait a little longer, right? In a franchise business, that plumber would have said, hey, Ken, I got you booked for 2 o'clock tomorrow. You get an email. Ken, your appointment and Joe's going to be coming at 2 o'clock tomorrow. 30 minutes out. Hey, Joe's on his way. He'll be there in 30 minutes. Track his vehicle. Hey, Joe's at your front door. Let him in. Hey, did Joe do a good job? Please write to service. That's what you get with a franchise business. You get great customer service. You get great support. You get great operating systems, right? Which allows you to compete with unsophisticated mom and pops all day long. So you get the advantage. Plus, you get better cost of goods. Plus, you get the instruction sheet. The only thing you need to do is listen, learn, and apply the model. The number two reason is that besides running out of money, the number two reason why you go out of business is you don't, you know, in a franchise, that is, you don't learn and follow the instructions, which takes me to number two. The people who should never own a franchise, know-it-alls. You get those people that you meet all the time. They already know it before you even told them. Franchises hate those people because they come into the system saying, I don't need to go through training. I already know how to do this. And they're like, yeah, you know what? I don't think you should buy a franchise because that's what you're buying. You're buying a model. You're buying an operating system. You're buying a process. Is there room to adjust? Absolutely, because every market's different, right? So they give you the parameters, you run it, and you still got to react to market conditions and your customer base. So you have flexibility, but largely when you own a franchise, you're not spending 50% of your time figuring out how do I do this business? You're spending 100% of your time making the money, which is doing the business. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And no, I like that. And so the statistics of all small businesses, 95% fail. Franchising is obviously in a separate kind of category. If it's got a blueprint to follow. Is there a failure rate of franchising?
I got to look that up. I've never looked that up, but I now that I'm curious, I got to look that up. No, I don't know. Reasons. Okay, here's the other thing. For those reasons, though, I just know anecdotally, franchise businesses have a much higher success rate, which reduces that risk factor, all that stuff. The thing is, not only do you have proven systems and operating systems and the initial training, you also have an executive team at the corporate office that consists of anywhere from 5 to 100 people, right? Staffed with a VP of marketing, VP of sales, VP of operations, run by a president. And they're there every single day to assist you and to coach you and to help you address issues, help you optimize. You have a whole team. You're not by yourself. You guys know when you start your business, what you have? You had Ken and David.
Yeah.
Well, why do I fix this? I don't know. David, how do I fix that? All right, let's try this. Let's throw it in the wall and see. Instead, you got a VP of operations that's like, hey, my margin's off. My margin should be 25%. I'm only at 15. Where am I hemorrhaging? Like, my cost of goods too high? My labor too high? Where am I going wrong? Help me adjust that. All those folks, my close rate, there's an average for everything. You'll know exactly where you stand in that franchise. You'll know if you're average, above average, or below average.
Like
you're in your own business. You have no idea if you're successful. Hey, Dave, we made money this month. Yeah, that's it, right? But are we crushing it or aren't we? In a franchise system, you'll know if you're like on the bottom half, you're like, I better kick myself in the pants. Or better yet, let me call the VP of sales. Let me call the VP of operations. How do I optimize my business? What am I doing wrong?
Got it. No, that is really helpful. And I will say, like, on the independent business owner side of things, yeah, when we do get financials back, if net income's positive, it's thumbs up. But we don't really know how we're doing relative to other people in our scenario. And that alone, that benchmarking would be helpful. Now, there are probably people listening who are saying to themselves, I have been in corporate life for 10, 15, 20 years. Why even qualify to be a business owner? Is this going to be a good fit for me? How would you answer that question?
Yeah, so here, a couple of things, right? Corporate executives can make great business owners because all the soft skills you've learned from being in a corporate world, you're learning how to manage peers, you're learning how to manage down, you're learning how to project and plan, you learn how to do timetables, you learn how to budget. I mean, all these skills, I mean, you learn to hire and fire, you learn how to do reviews and evaluations. I mean, you know, all these soft skills are going to come in handy when you run your own business. You know, it maturity, communication, those type of things. Those are basic things, right? Coming out of college, you may not know how to present or negotiate or discuss or even collaborate. When you're in a workforce, you learn all these things, how to manage your employees, how to motivate your employees. I mean, you know, almost every mid-level manager has some kind of employee to manage, you know, and how do you keep them motivated? How do you keep them on task? How do you discipline them, right? All those are soft skills you gain. Those are 100% applicable to your own business. Now, are all executives qualified? There's some basic human qualities. And I don't care if you're a stay-at-home mom who now all of a sudden your kids are 13 and 15 and don't need you to be babysitting them all day and you got some free time. Or if you're an executive who has 30 years experience cranking out P&Ls and traveling to, you know, the country to do sales. You got to be optimistic. You have to have an abundance mindset. You got to be a positive person. You have to be a self-starter. Number one, if you need someone to tell you to get up and get work done, keep your job, because that's what a job is for. The job is there to tell you, Ken, you're late at work today. Bad boy. Hey, you know what? If you want to raise a promotion, you better get your ass to work on time and you better get these things done by the end of this week. If that's the kind of person you are, keep your job. It might be miserable, but if you can't motivate yourself, don't own a business. Because guess what? You know who your boss is? you. If you can't wake up, I mean, I get up at 6 o'clock on my own. It took me time. I'm a morning person. When I look at that ceiling, I'm out of bed because I just think, man, I got stuff to do. I can't just lay here, right? But that's me, right? That's why I love business ownership, because every minute I'm thinking, how can I be better? Those people are fantastic. People who are abundance mindset people. That means that the world's not coming to an end. People are going to steal my market share. Oh, there's only limited amount of money to go around. No, people come in saying, you know what? There's a lot of money out there, and I'm going to go take my fair share. In fact, I take more than my fair share, right? And if I deliver great services, I'm going to get it back. I have no problem sharing advice, sharing information, because I am that mindset that if I share, I'll get something back in return. It may not be at the same at that minute, but I have no problem sharing, because you know, it's kind of that karma thing. You know, what goes around comes around. You know, if someone's not going to collaborate with me and again, yeah, I'm not going to share information, you think I'm going to do that with you? Heck yeah. You know what I'm saying? But the guy's like, hey, you know, you're in a jam. Hey, let me give you this advice. The minute this person needs advice, guess who's going to be the first person at his door for help? It's going to be me.
Absolutely. So the next question I've got is, I'll give you a little story. I used to go to Jimmy John's probably 3-4 times a week. After Jimmy too. After I had a gym, I'd swing by there. It's quick and, you know, they're really fast. And so I became friends with the owner. And so, and he's there every single day and he's working and he's, and so my question is, for franchising, if you want to buy a franchise, will you, you know, what about the people that are thinking, hey, will I be stuck in there making Jimmy John's sandwiches every day? Like I just, like the story that I just told you, or are, you know, are different franchises, ones where you can be a passive owner or some that are you're an active owner? What's the landscape look like?
The general answer to that is that there's two types of businesses. There's owner operator businesses, which means that you can't have a W-2, right? You can't be working anywhere else. Now, the fact is, every franchise or any franchise in my portfolio, nobody is going to be having you punch a time clock. The only franchise that does that is Chick-fil-A, right? And that's a totally different model. You're only paying 10 grand, but you're buying yourself a general manager's job. They don't own anything. The minute you don't show up for 40 hours a week behind that kitchen frying chicken, they can take it away from you. Okay. When you own a franchise, a real franchise, I mean, that business is yours, you know, which means that, you know, they're going to expect you to be there doing what you need to do. Okay. But they don't tell you it's 60 hours, 50 hours, or 40 hours. You just got to be available. That's it. Which means you can't have a W-2, because the reality is when you have W-2, guess what? You don't own your time. You got to ask for permission, which is why all of us hated it, right? Because we don't have control over it. So that's the only difference. Owner operator means you can't have a W-2. Semi-absentee means it's a manager-run business. You can have a W-2 and run it, right? And because you're not involved in the day-to-day. Okay. So that's the rough categories, right? Can people become slaves to their business? You can be a slave to whatever you want. Okay. And here's the thing. People are control freaks who can't relinquish control and delegate. Guess what? You're going to be married to your business because you have an issue, right? Is that the most effective way to run a business? I'll say no. I have two different couples that own the same exact business. One couple is love and life. They hire employees and they're just managing the business. I get another couple who's up till 2 a.m. working on the business, you know, and they're getting burned out. And after talking to them, I realized that this one couple just can't let go. They're saying my employees can't do as good as me. That is the kiss of death. Because I said, listen, do me a favor. I said, talk to this other couple. You're going to get burned out. This isn't the right way to do this business. Now, here's the other thing that people need to understand. When you buy a franchise, you're not buying a job, okay? You're buying a business. What that means is that your job is to manage and grow that business. It doesn't mean you're a guy going out there fixing roofs, grooming dogs, all right? Because your employees are your revenue stream. The difference between a job is you make what you earn. You can't tell your boss to pay you twice because you're not two people. They'd be like, oh, yeah, what are you talking about? You want two paychecks? No, you have one paycheck. You only put 40 hours in. Yeah, if you want to work 80 hours, go ahead. I'll think about giving you more. But generally, these are salary jobs. So I did 80 hours. I didn't get any more money. Now, here's the thing. I'll give you an example. Dog grooming business. Okay. I got a guy who's like, I'm too old to be grooming dogs. I said, if I catch you grooming dogs, I'm going to fire you myself because that means you're not doing your job, which is hiring and managing people, optimizing, paying the bills, managing the marketing. Every dog grooming van can make you 100 grand in profit. Every territory can accommodate 3 to 5 vans. If in the first year you're not at 3 vans making 300 grand, you're not running it properly. If you're driving around cutting dogs' hair, guess what? You're never going to have 3 vans in a year. You'll barely have one running, which means you just capture income. So the answer to the question is, you got to be a person that's willing to own a business and run a business and delegate, because if you want a job, keep your job.
So you talked about owner absentee business, you know, analyzing financials. What would be a typical week for somebody that has an owner absentee type of franchise?
Say that one more time.
What would be the responsibilities for somebody, or what would an average week look like for somebody that owned an owner absentee business?
Yeah, so that's easy, because I own an indoor cycling studio. I chose indoor cycling for three reasons. It's a recurring revenue stream. Once I get the membership up, it's month to month. I can predict down to $100 what I'm going to make next month, okay? Number two, it's a category I'm passionate about. I love fitness. I can talk to people about indoor cycling and the benefits of indoor cycling till you pass out, right? Because I believe in it. Number three is semi-absentee, which means my manager opens the door at 5:30. It's not even my manager. It's the front desk team opens the door at 5:30, closes it at 8 o'clock at night. And so I have 60 employees. Half of them are instructors. I'm too old to be teaching a spin class. Nobody wants to see me on a bike. They want to see a nice 20, 30-year-old who's like, you know, exciting and understands good music. And I'm like, I'm none of that. So I don't belong on that bike. I'd ruin my business if I tried to teach a spin class. You don't want to see me in spandex, God forbid. And then the other half of my employees are high school kids. They're paid $10 an hour. I'd shoot myself before I accepted $10 an hour to sit at the front desk. I mean, that's just way below me. Okay. My manager is the one who runs the ship. They make sure that, you know, the team is trained, that they're showing up, that the place is clean, right? I call my business a lifestyle business. I spend about 5 to 6 hours a week. I do payroll. I make marketing decisions. I have a weekly call with my manager, and I'm managing and monitoring, not managing, the KPIs every morning. I know how many new riders I have, how many converted to members, how many people I've lost, how many people I've gained from last week, how much I have coming in, because I have all their credit cards. I see all my billing. I know my average membership. I know all that stuff. That's 5 or 6 hours a week, and I make 150 grand in profit. That's as passive as you can get. Okay. That's why I bought that business. There's no such thing as, I know everyone's thinking, how I want passive income. There's no such thing as passive income. Now, the only time I'm in the studio is when I take spin classes. Guess what? Owning an indoor cycling studio motivates me to go ride 3-4 times a week. When I'm in that studio, I'm kind of a super user. I'm seeing, is it clean? Is my front desk interacting properly? Are they greeting people properly? Are my instructors teaching properly? As soon as I'm done with class, I'm also high-fiving and talking to members. They know I'm the owner, and they smack talk all the time. Hey, you're going down to, buddy, you're last. I said, yeah, you're going to be pulling up the tail end of this ride. I'm like, yeah, let's bring it. Let's go, big talker. Let's go. You know, I said, oh, my Wheaties this morning, you're going down, right? So, I mean, it's fun, right? It's fun. I high-five my employees when they've done a great job. I was like, hey, I heard you killed it yesterday. You closed 3 people. Way to go. I'm in there 15 minutes before class. I'm there 15 minutes after class. And then all my feedback goes to my manager or to my lead instructor. Hey, so-and-so didn't, you know, coach on cue. Hey, so-and-so had vulgar language in their music. Can you make sure that doesn't happen again? Hey, the bathrooms look dirty. Make sure this shift is cleaning. I mean, that all goes to my managers, because I empower them to run a business. I went to Italy for 3 weeks last year. I wasn't even close to the United States, right? I ran payroll in Italy. I mean, that's the ideal, right? Is to have business making you money while you provide oversight. That's what owning a business is, not being a slave to your business. That's your problem if you become a slave to your business. It's not the model.
If you're a podcast host or someone wanting to be interviewed on podcasts as a guest, visit podmatch.com. Podmatch automatically connects ideal podcast guests and hosts together for interviews. We always say it works just like a dating app, but instead of connecting you for dates, it connects you for podcast interviews. Podmatch has connected over 85,000 guests and hosts together for interviews that listeners love, all while saving you countless hours of administrative work through built-in automations. If you're ready to level up your podcast interviews on either side of the mic, start today by visiting podmatch.com.
A follow-on question. So you discovered, you know, passive income is elusive from everyone, and it doesn't sound like it's possible at all in franchising. And so in the model you just spoke of, how long did it take you to get to that point? Because we all know that there's a ramp-up period.
Well, in the beginning, to be honest, right, I chose to work in my business for the first month, like every day. I was there at 5:30 in the morning, didn't leave until 8 o'clock at night. Okay, now that was for the first 2 weeks. I mean, you know, the second 2 weeks, I went in a little bit less. Okay. After that first month, I was probably putting about 10 hours a week, 15 hours a week. Year six now, I'm telling you, I'm only doing 5 or 6 hours a week. Every business, most businesses, and I talk about mine in particular, gets easier every year because you know what to expect. You have a team that's proven. I know what I can expect from them. They know what they can expect from me. If I lost a lot of key employees, I'd be going back to a little bit more work, only in the short term until I can get and train someone else. Okay. But there's also tricks to that because I always have, in addition to my general manager, I have an assistant manager. Why? Because I learned from the first year, you always got to have a backup. If any one of those people leave, I'm okay. I don't need to step up. I just need to hire the replacement because they're each other's backup, right? So I implement that after the first year because I never want to be held whole in the bag. And that's for you as an owner to set up.
Follow up on that, and then I'll kick it over to David. And so you'd mentioned 150 net. How many years did it take you to whittle out in that ramp up period to get to where you are now, stable?
Roughly the first year, I made about 75 grand.
Okay.
You know, and because I was still building, you know, I was still building my membership. By year two, I was probably about 120, 125. By year three, I was at 150. Once I got to 150, I'm selling out most of my peak classes, which is 6 p.m., which is Saturday, 9:30 a.m. I mean, there's certain classes that are just more appealing to people. And so now I'm kind of building out the fringes around the classes that aren't full, right? And stuff like that, doing, you know, promotions and good theme rides and stuff like that. You know, so I still have room to grow, but probably for the last 3 years, I've been consistently netting, you know, close to 150. Give or take, you know, 20,000, 25,000.
And last question, promise, David, and then I'll kick it over. After 3 years, so you pretty much everything you said, you know, each year, your first 3 years, you were building, you know, building up your marketing, investing in marketing, building up your subscribers. And when you hit year three, you're kind of on cruise control, just filling in gaps here and there. Obviously, a brick and mortar franchise business like a spinning class is a physical location. And so once you're kind of at your max, was about that 3 year mark, do you have any plans on it? Wouldn't it be very easy for you just to go to the other side of the city you're on and open up a second one?
Well, it gets a little bit more complicated than that, right? So In franchising, this happens all the time. I have guys come to me and say, I want to open an Orange Theory. By the time you took a workout at Orange Theory, that market is probably was sold out about a year ago. Okay. Think about, right? Because about a year before that business opens. So you got to be on the forefront. When I bought my studio 6 years ago, I was only the third indoor cycling studio of the kind. It's called Cycle Bar.
Okay.
All of Dallas, Fort Worth area. Now there's 18. Within the third year, the market sold out. I can buy one if I wanted to. If I want to buy one, I got to buy it from an existing owner. Can expand in Oklahoma or Louisiana or wherever. But that's all based on your strategy. My goal was to have diversification. I own four businesses now. The Cycle Studio is what I consider my passive income because I put the least number of hours in it, you know, 5 to 6 hours a week. I have my consulting business, which is marketing consulting, franchise consulting, and I bought some property and I have a short-term rental business. And so that's how I was able to quadruple my income because I got four different incomes that I created, you know, all of them requiring different amounts of work. My consulting work, I can fluctuate, dial up and down as much as I want, more or less. So that gives me ultimate flexibility. The reason why I bought a franchise was because that was buying me my consistent month-to-month income. Now, I remember 25 years ago, I started doing consulting work and marketing because, you know, back then I was teasing the idea of saying, screw the man or fire the man. But I couldn't tolerate the ups and downs of consulting. I'd have a big project. I was living high on a hog. And then all of a sudden I have nothing. And I was like depressed because I'm like, man, I don't know when I'm going to get that next project. My strategy was to have an income that was consistent month to month, which is why I like the recurring revenue stream of the indoor cycling studio to bring me consistent income to allow me to take the ups and downs of consulting. Now that I have years doing consulting, that income is double what I make from the studio. So all four of those combined, yeah. Do I want more? Maybe, right? But I'm pretty happy with where I am. I just launched the short-term rental business. So, you know, is it a franchise I want to do? Maybe. My son's mumbling about wanting to get into business. And so he and I are going to start this project. I said, dude, one more year of college. Why don't you finish that first? And then we'll talk about business ownership. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
So, you know, I mean, so yeah, it's always on my radar. There's not a week that goes by that I don't start thinking, I want to buy this business. I mean, that's what happens when you own a candy store. You end up eating all your old candy. You know,
right.
I mean, it's true, man. I get excited every week about a different business. And I'm like, oh man, I got the new one. It's a defense business, self-defense business. They have a patented gun system that has recoil without live rounds. It has a sound and a recoil. And you can do all kinds of training so that you can have accuracy training. You can do real life close quarter scenario stuff. You can do all kinds of stuff without the risk of hurting yourself or hurting somebody else.
Interesting. It's like a simulator.
Yeah, but it's like, real gun weight, real sound, all that stuff. It's amazing.
One of the hardest words an entrepreneur can say is no.
It's true, but it's contagious too, right? Because
yeah,
you get the confidence up. And again, once you realize that I can do it, you know, you're like, I want to do more. I want to do the next thing. And the next, like, you have three e-commerce businesses, you know? I mean, soon you're going to have five because you're like, hey, I can do this. I'm just going to do it in a different category. And so like each of my businesses had slightly different roles. But I mean, once I get this fourth one rolling and I'm doing well in it, I mean, maybe I'll go to a fifth. Who knows? That's why I left entrepreneurship, because you ultimately had the freedom of time to decide. I mean, you know, and if you hire employees to take on half the duties that you're doing today, guess what? You'll make up more time to go do something else.
Yeah, you're just building up your skill sets.
That's right.
So David or Irving, any other topics we want to discuss, or do we want to get into the fire round?
I got one more, then let's get in the fire round. Irving, can you tell us a little bit more about Frame Guidance and what types of customers you serve?
Yeah, so Frame Guidance is, you know, my own consultancy where really my goal, I don't charge anything for my services, right? People are like, what? What are you crazy? What are you doing? Because I'm paid by the franchises in my portfolio to educate people with zero risk, zero obligation. If someone had to pay $5,000 to go learn about franchising without the idea that they were going to definitely do it, they probably wouldn't do it, right? Because that's way too much money. It's like me telling you, hey, you want to go buy a house? You can pay $1,000 to go look at that house. Why would I do that? I mean, I may not buy it. So it's the same thing. So Brand Guidance is a consultancy, but it really is more like an information source and advisory, is to help people explore, is franchising right for me? Like I mentioned to you earlier about this father and son team. This kid called me and goes, hey, I want to own a franchise of my own. I'm 24. I have $10,000. I mean, if I were a jerk, I would have said, you know what? Save your money. Call me back when you got 40 grand. But I'm not a jerk, right? I was like, hey, yeah, let's take the call. I love your ambition. Let me hear your story. And that's that Wingstop kid, right? He goes, I've been managing 10 Wingstops. I only make $65,000. And I know the owner's making hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And I can run this operation in my sleep. I want to own my own franchise. And I found that his father's willing to invest in the business, right? I wouldn't have learned that had I not talked to him. And he goes, I know I only have 10 grand, but my dad's loaded and he's going to buy me a business. He's going to fund me, right? I'm going to pay him back, but he's going to fund this because he wants me to have. It's like, so I'm always willing to talk to anybody. So what I'm here to do is help educate people. As long as you have enough information, most people are too afraid to get into a business, right? People are afraid. I mean, I have enough money. I mean, I have what it takes. It's all right. Have a conversation with me. I'll tell you. I can tell you, and I'll be very honest. You should never own a business, right? If I sense this person's a know-it-all, they have a hard time telling me they have a hard time getting to work, I'm like, dude, don't own a business. Or if they don't have enough money, I was like, hey, this is how much you need to save up for it, right? This is, you know, you have bad credit. Here, this is what you need to do. Clean this credit up, you know? So I'm here to help people no matter what. And I'm not here to sell anybody. I'm here to advise people. And that's kind of what my business is. It's about helping people explore options. And I view my job seriously as paying it forward, because if someone didn't do that for me when I was at my crossroads, I may not have known about this. I may not have been able to change my life the way I did. I'm forever grateful for that opportunity. And so that's what I'm here to do.
Excellent. And we'll put links to all that in the show notes. So if you're driving, don't write this down or anything. We'll have links to everything in the show notes. All right, Irving. So every guest we have on the show, we run them through the ringer. It's called the fire round. It's a series of rapid fire questions. Are you ready? What is your favorite book?
It's Rich Dad, Poor Dad with Guy Kiyosaki. Love that. I mean, that was my motivation and inspiration to do what I do.
Excellent. What are your hobbies?
Big mountain biker. Love mountain biking. Love camping. Love outdoor stuff. Yeah, anything physical. You know, I like getting outside.
Awesome. I was thinking it was spinning.
Well, that one. I mean, it is. I was only number one sport. In fact, I didn't start spinning until I lived in Wisconsin. I couldn't ride. And I'm like, this is for the birds. I'm like, what the heck? And so I was like, hey, did you ever try indoor cycling? I'm like, no, what's that? And I got hooked on it, right? Because it also preserved my cycling legs to the spring. Because normally, like, I would ride, because I lived in New York. I lived in San Francisco, Wisconsin. So I've lived all the climates. And I hated being in shape, cycling shape, and then all of a sudden going down to zero all winter, right? And so indoor cycling became my thing. And I'm like, oh, I kind of like this.
Yeah, it's a good fit.
It is related.
Yeah, for sure. All right, next one. What is one thing that you do not miss about working for the man?
Oh, man, I tell you, there's a difference between external pressure and internal pressure, right? External pressure just causes anxiety because I'm like, okay, what are the expectations? You know, someone saying, hey, you haven't finished this yet. 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 When you have self-motivation, it's like, all right, I really should be doing this. I want to accomplish this. And it's a very different pressure. You know, external pressure causes anxiety, right? And internal pressure doesn't. I mean, I can still have motivation. You know what I mean? It's very different. I am so happy never to ever report to another man, you know what I mean? Or somebody, period.
Yeah, absolutely. Question, what do you think sets apart successful entrepreneurs from those who give up, fail, or never get started?
It's being a self-starter. It goes back to that. It's having a positive mindset and being a self-starter. Those two things, because, you know, you can have rough days. And if that's going to make you fail and give up on life, you know, I mean, you don't belong as an entrepreneur. I mean, you know, they say that most entrepreneurs fail till they succeed, you know, and that's true, right? Especially in a startup, that's all you're doing is failing till you succeed. In a franchise, it's different, right? You have slightly less of that trial and error. There's still some failure in there, you know? And if you listen to people like Tony Robbins, like he'll tell you, fail forward. Don't fail backwards, right? So it's that self-starter and that positive mindset.
Absolutely. Fran, want to thank you for being a guest on the Firing the Man podcast. If people are interested in getting in touch with you or working with Fran Guidance, what would be the best way?
Yeah. So my website, franguidance.com, has all my contact information. I have a calendar link. You schedule there. My cell phone number is 214-908-9791. I mean, it's on my website. Call me. Just don't prank me. It's my real number. I'm not smart enough to all these fake numbers and all that stuff. So I don't screen my calls. Hopefully you don't get any mean people out there listening to your podcast.
Firing the Man Nation's a group of good people. So anyway, Fran, thank you so much for your time today, and we're looking forward to staying in touch.
Hey, thanks so much.
Before you go, we wanted to share a new service that Ken and I have been using called Getida that has made us over $10,000 in Amazon reimbursements. The service requires no monthly subscription, and Getida collects a small percentage of the money they recover for you. It takes less than 5 minutes to set up and works on all Amazon marketplaces. Go to Getida.com, Getida.com, and enter promo code FTM400. That's FTM for Firing the Man 400 to get your first $400 in reimbursements commission free. How much money does Amazon owe you?